The meeting will come to order. Welcome to the November 15th, 2024 regular meeting of the Local Agency Formation Commission. I am Chair Hillary Ronan, and I am joined by Vice Chair Hope Williams and Commissioners Dean Preston and Isaac Sevier. Our clerk is Elisa Samara, and I would like to thank James Echeverry at SFGov TV for broadcasting this meeting. Madam Clerk, do you have any announcements?
Yes, Madam Chair. LAFCO is convening hybrid meetings that allow in-person attendance and public comment while still providing remote access and public comment via telephone. Public comment will be taken on each item on this agenda. Those attending in person will be allowed to speak first, and then we will take those who are waiting on the telephone line. If you wish to provide public comment remotely, the call-in information is scrolling across the screen. When connected, you will hear the meeting discussions, but you will be muted and in listening mode only. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, those joining us in person should line up to speak, and those on the telephone should dial *3 to also be added to the speaker line. If you are on the telephone, please remember to turn down your TV and all listening devices you may be using. Alternatively, you may submit public comment in writing in either of the following ways. You can email them to myself, the clerk, at Elisa, A-L-I-S-A, dot Samara, S-O-M-E-R-A, at sfgov.org, or you may submit them written via U.S. Postal Service to our office at City Hall, 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, Room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. If you submit written public comment, it will be forwarded to the commissioners and also included as part of the official file. Madam Chair, that concludes my communication.
Thank you. Can you please call roll call?
Yes, on the roll. Chair Ronan.
Here.
Ronan, present. Vice Chair Williams. Vice Chair Williams, present. Commissioner Preston. Preston, present. Commissioner Sevier.
Present.
Sevier, present. Madam Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Can you please call item number 2?
Yes, item number 2 is approval of the LAFCO minutes from the September 20th, 2024 regular meeting.
Great. Seeing no one on roll call for changes, does anyone want to make a motion?
We need to take public comment, Madam Chair.
After public comment, is there any public comment on this item?
Checking the remote line. Jaime is manning our public comment line today. There are no public commenters.
Public comment is now closed. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Can we please take roll call?
On item number 2, Vice Chair Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Preston?
Aye.
Preston, aye. Commissioner Sevier?
Aye.
Sevier, aye. Chair Ronan?
Aye.
Ronan, aye. There are 4 ayes.
Motion passes. Madam Clerk, can you please call item number 3?
Yes, item number 3 is an update on the electric bikes for delivery workers pilot program. Members of the public who wish to provide public comment and are joining us remotely should press *3.
Thank you, and we will now hear from Anna Shirutu, a clean transportation specialist with the San Francisco Department on the Environment. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me. My name's Anna Shirutu. I'm a clean transportation specialist with the San Francisco Environment Department, and I'll be providing an update on our e-bike pilot program.
If I may, would you please speak directly into the mic? You may want to pull it
up.
Yes. Thank you.
Let's see, is there a way to get, okay. So in 2022, SF Environment received a $2.4 million grant to implement 4 projects identified in our EV roadmap. One of the funded projects was the e-bike pilot program, which aims to study the benefits and barriers of e-bike deliveries. This pilot was also largely inspired by LAFCO's Emerging Mobility Labor Study, which recommended that the city explore a rebate program for delivery workers specifically. So this slide shows our partners for the California Energy Commission grant. We have Grid Alternatives, which is our implementation partner and manages recruitment and participant case management. SF Bike Coalition provides bike safety trainings to participants, and Driver's Seat was our data collection partner. We also had advisory support from your commission as well as the SFPUC. And finally, the Hub Bicycles was our equipment vendor. So a quick overview of how the pilot was structured. We split our participants into 2 groups based on the mode of delivery they used. We had e-bike riders, which was our pilot group, and car drivers, which was our control group. For the e-bike group, we enrolled 30 participants across two separate cohorts. E-bike riders were offered full ownership of the e-bike after they completed the four-month study. To ensure we had comparative data, we also enrolled a control group of 30 car drivers. Drivers received a $100 stipend at the end of a shorter two-week study period. To recruit both groups, GRID tapped into local community networks, partnering with various organizations to generate interest. Uber Eats and DoorDash also helped promote recruitment. We ultimately received over 200 applications, and because the program was oversubscribed, priority was given to applicants with demonstrated financial need. The project team gathered and compared data from all participants to assess the pilot's performance. The data relied upon for the pilot's findings came from a combination of qualitative data collected through surveys, informational interviews, and listening sessions, while also using quantitative data collected via the driver's seat app and screenshots from delivery workers. In the next few slides, I'll go over our main findings. So on delivery efficiency, we found that e-bike participants worked fewer hours and completed fewer deliveries, averaging about 2 hours and 6 deliveries per week, compared to car participants, 4 hours and 15 deliveries per week. Our findings align with a recent US DoorDash survey, which found that the average Dasher spends less than 4 hours per week on deliveries. For many delivery workers, including our pilot participants, delivery work is a secondary source of income. E-bike delivery workers also reported longer wait times and received fewer orders than their car counterparts. However, they also highlighted the unique advantages of e-bikes in urban settings. E-bike couriers could more easily navigate through traffic and fit into smaller parking spaces, reducing instances of double parking and parking violations. Many e-bike participants also noted that they spent little to no time waiting in traffic. On earning potential, e-bike participants earned an average of $10.69 per delivery, totaling around $55 per week with tips, while car participants made slightly more with $11.47 per delivery and about $145 per week with tips. This difference stems from e-bike couriers generally working fewer hours and handling smaller, lower-cost deliveries. While hourly earnings would be a helpful metric, our data didn't capture the time participants spent waiting for new delivery jobs to come through the app. This is important to note because, again, e-bike participants reported longer wait times than car participants, which impacted their hourly income. And the time spent waiting for a job to come through the app is not paid time. So to better reflect actual earnings, we are using earnings per delivery as a more accurate measure. Despite lower per-delivery earnings, e-bikes are more cost-effective overall. With a lower purchase price and reduced maintenance costs, e-bikes offer a higher annual net profit, making them a more cost-effective choice in the long run. The environmental impact of e-bikes has been overwhelmingly positive. Over the course of the pilot, e-bike participants eliminated 2,296 vehicle miles traveled. E-bikes also produce almost no emissions compared to deliveries made with cars. We are assuming that some emissions are generated from charging the bike, but this could be zero for residents using Clean Power SF. To support and expand e-bike deliveries in San Francisco, we have 6 targeted recommendations. I'll go over them at a high level, but you can read more about each recommendation in our pilot's case study. Our first recommendation is to pilot curbside charging for micromobility devices. E-bike couriers often face limited battery range. 1/3 of participants noted that they needed to charge their bike multiple times per shift, which can lead to reduced earnings over time. Introducing micromobility curbside charging would help reduce range anxiety and potentially lead to increased earnings for delivery workers using e-bikes. We are also recommending that the city explore secure parking solutions. Bike theft remains a significant barrier and concern to participants. During the pilot, 6 of the 30 e-bikes were unfortunately stolen. To address this, the city should install secure bike lockers and staffed bike valets to provide safe storage and reduce theft. Longer-term storage options could also be paired with charging. Third, we're recommending that the city address hazards for bicycle deliveries. E-bike couriers often navigate difficult road conditions, including cars parked in bike lanes, busy intersections, and roadway surface defects. The city can help address these hazards by expanding protected bike lanes, creating dedicated loading zones, and implementing mid-block curb cutouts to improve bike safety. Our fourth recommendation relates to e-bike rebates. As highlighted in LAFCO's Emerging Mobility Labor Study, cost is a major barrier to e-bike adoption, with prices ranging from $1,500 to $5,000 or more. Expanding San Francisco's e-bike rebate programs to include cargo bikes would help minimize this financial barrier, making it more affordable for delivery workers to transition to e-bikes and boosting adoption citywide. Another recommendation coming out of this study is to create an urban freight team. Currently, efforts that would fall under this type of team are spread across departments. Many other cities in the U.S. and abroad are forming urban freight teams within their transportation departments to address challenges in urban goods movement and last-mile deliveries. Establishing an urban freight team here could help drive innovative freight projects. Lastly, we are recommending to pilot a city-led micro-logistics hub for deliveries. Our pilot findings show that e-bike deliveries are essential to San Francisco's transportation network. However, app-based delivery models often limit earning potential for on-demand workers, regardless of their mode of transportation. To further showcase the benefits of e-bike deliveries, the city could initiate a micro-hub pilot, beginning with a feasibility study to identify optimal locations and logistic partnerships. Micro-hubs are small, strategically located facilities with storage and loading docks that consolidate and distribute goods. They are often located in parking garages, vacant lots, and curbside spaces that are close to final delivery points. So we are wrapping up work on the California Energy Commission pilot, and this work from the CEC e-bike pilot has paved the way for an exciting expansion through U.S. Department of Energy funding. With this support from the U.S. DOE, the project team will recruit up to 60 additional e-bike riders and 60 car drivers. We're also exploring partnerships with small businesses beyond food delivery. The DOE cohorts will be launched over the next 2 years, and findings from the pilot will be used to create an e-bike calculator tool. The tool will help delivery workers evaluate the economic and environmental benefits of switching to an e-bike. And that concludes my slides. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, any questions? Commissioner Williams?
Hi, thank you so much for that presentation. It's very exciting news. Hopefully my question will be coherent, but with the new statewide law that prevents drivers from parking within 20 feet of any intersection, do you think that would be a good space for installing chargers for these bikes?
Yeah, I think that could be an interesting idea. I'm not as familiar with parking laws as it relates to bikes, so I'm not sure if that would still obstruct kind of the crosswalk view. Because with these, unless it's kind of like, there's different types of bicycle charging stations. So in New York City, they're piloting battery swapping lockers, so that you wouldn't really have your bike parked there. It'd be more of like a stop and go, sort of grab a new battery, put your old battery in to charge, and then keep delivering. So I think that could be a potential sort of like lower visibility solution. But with other charging solutions, you would have to leave the bike there. So that might still obstruct the view of the crosswalk.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks so much for your presentation, Anna. I am curious if the e-bike delivery drivers had any thoughts about how far away this parking is. So when we talk about some of these like little parking garages, I've used those in the past, especially commuting on Caltrain. They're super great. I imagine that because of the pressure drivers are under in terms of like the time and everything else, they might need to be, there might need to be many of them. Did you get any feedback about what's the density like, how close to every business, et cetera?
We did, yes. This was a survey question that we asked both drivers and bikers. I don't have that data in front of me right now, but I can send a follow-up with some of the other charts that we've created. But generally, e-bikers were able to get closer to the delivery points and the drop-off points than car drivers. And what we saw with a lot of the car drivers was that they're often just double parking or parking in bike lanes to pick up the food, especially in busier corridors like the Mission or downtown. But with bikers, they're able to either lock their bike up with one of the bike locker areas there or bring the bike into the restaurant.
Yeah, that's a great point too about double parking. I just wanted to make one more comment if I can, which is just I think it's such an important time for San Francisco to really be leading and developing studies like this. We just got the news yesterday that it's very likely that the federal EV tax credit incentive will go away under the next federal administration. And so it kind of brings a new opportunity, I think, for local governments like ours to lead on how do we get as many of our people out of our cars and into kind of these micromobility situations. And so hopefully this will be kind of a beacon to others and also help us understand how do we make that switch so that going forward, we're not just putting people back in more fossil fuel burning cars. So thanks for all the work on this. It was great to hear your presentation.
Thank you.
Supervisor Preston, or Commissioner Preston.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation, for all the work on this. It's really great to see how this has grown from the initial research project through the early pilot, and thank you for all your work on this. I did want to ask one question. The earnings per delivery, any insight as to why that's lower? I understand it's outweighed by the cost savings, but any insight into why the earnings per delivery are lower?
Yeah, so we weren't able to see the actual items that folks were delivering, but anecdotally what we heard was that e-bike delivery workers that had used both a car and an e-bike said that on the e-bike they're often allocated smaller orders, so like coffee orders or maybe like one sandwich, where with car drivers, they often have the bigger orders that are higher paying. So with the e-bike deliveries, they're lower cost deliveries and they're shorter distances, which take less time, so they're compensated less.
I see. Thank you. I guess one other question, and this is maybe both for you and for LAFCO staff. I'm just curious, looking forward as we're tapping new sources and funding and trying to expand on this, like just the any insight or thoughts on the LAFCO role. I mean, obviously LAFCO's initial study really provided a lot of the foundation for this work, and then I've appreciated the ongoing collaboration between LAFCO and Department of the Environment. But I don't know if they're, for example, with further some of the studies around the impact and that kind of thing, whether that's work that is anticipated that will be held and led by Department of Environment, or whether that's whether there's future LAFCO work around analyzing the impacts and opportunities. So to either our executive officer or to you, I'm just curious if that's kind of to be determined, or if they're, what the plan is on that.
Jeremy Pollack, LAFCO executive officer. I'd say the role we played in through this process has basically been an advising role of reviewing the surveys and program design and offering feedback, and that was I was imagining going forward in the phase two to continue that role if that's helpful for the environment department. Happy to, I don't think it's something that we've really talked about in the future phase or other sort of work related to this, and would definitely welcome any thoughts from commissioners on if there's a niche that LAFCO could fill on this.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that too. I think especially thinking about different policy levers that we could pull to make e-bike deliveries more financially equitable for folks, I think that would be something that we're also interested in exploring.
Yeah, thank you both for that. And I would also just add to the and appreciate Commissioner Sevier's point about the context here in both federally. I'd also add that we simultaneously have things going at the board with the Board of Supervisors authorizing the e-bike incentive program, which is, you know, not limited to or targeting deliveries, but I think you know, is another piece of this puzzle of trying to move folks the mode shift from their cars to e-bikes, and so that they're, you know, that work will also be happening at the board as well. So I think it's great to get these updates, and I'm just really, you know, this is one of these things really exciting to see how far this has come and any ways that we can increase investment in this, especially at a time where we may face some federal challenges, as Commissioner Sevier points out. I think it's going to be driven more by the state and locally. But thank you for the presentation and for all your work on this.
Thank you, and thank you also for your work. I just have a quick question. Was there a reason why the e-bike participants received less orders? I mean, was there any conversation with the companies themselves about why that happened?
Yes, we did. Before kind of publishing the case study, we did send a draft to all the TNCs that had helped us with recruitment and kind of asked that question. And we didn't get much of a response from them, but what they did say is that they try to weigh safety for the bikers, so they don't want to overload capacity for folks. So I think they tend to, if it's kind of a borderline order that might be too large for a bike, they tend to just push it to cars.
Interesting, because I think, you know, for the future of this work, it would really be interesting to push them to have better policies around this, because it looks like they're holding a lot of power in this situation, and by not giving more orders to e-bike riders, they're skewing the benefit of riding an e-bike. I just find that part interesting. So it would be interesting to explore if there was any requirements we could impose upon the TNCs, or if we could just urge them to change their internal policies around this, but focus a little bit more energy that way. But thank you. This is super interesting. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can we now open this item up for public comment?
Yes. If any members of the public would like to speak on item number 3, please line up to speak now if you're joining us in person. If you're on the remote line, please press star 3. Seeing no one here in person, Jaime is checking the remote line. And Madam Chair, we have no callers.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Thank you so much. Since this is not an action item, Madam Clerk, can you please call item number 4?
Yes, item number 4 is an update on the Clean Power SF, including Clean Power SF activities, and an update on green financing and natural gas decommissioning studies.
Wonderful, and we have Michael Himes here from the SFPUC.
Good morning, LAFCO commissioners. Mike Himes, I'm the Deputy Assistant General Manager at the SFPUC, responsible for Clean Power SF and our power resources. Happy Friday. I've got a short report for you today. I'll cover our usual program enrollment and service statistics, and I'm going to share some information on our renewable energy supplies, including a new clean energy supply contract. Clean Power SF continues to successfully serve our customers. Participation in the program remains steady and stable. In fact, our enrollment stats haven't changed since I presented to you last in July. That's a good thing. But I did want to note we're anticipating that our Super Green sales will continue to grow as the next group of large commercial buildings, at least 250,000 square feet, become subject to the city's renewable energy ordinance. So we've been preparing for that to occur and customers to upgrade to our Super Green product. In July, I shared this information about Pro 263, our 2022 renewable energy supplies request for offers. This solicitation The SFPUC sought renewable energy from new or existing renewable energy resources that could directly deliver electricity into the California Independent System Operators managed grid. In Pro 263, we were seeking offers from clean energy resources that could help us meet state regulatory requirements and support our efforts to develop and maintain a 100% renewable energy supply for Clean Power SF. Earlier this year, the Board of Supervisors approved a contract with the IP Easley Solar Project, which was bid into Pro 263, and we presented that here at LAFCO in July. Today, I wanted to share with you some information about another power supply contract, our largest ever agreement to purchase power from a new wind energy facility. That's the Gonzaga Ridge project that will be developed by Scout Energy in Merced County. Gonzaga Ridge will provide 147.5 megawatts of clean wind energy, as well as 50 megawatts of battery energy storage. The project will generate enough electricity annually to power approximately 120,000 average San Francisco residences. Additionally, the 50 megawatt four-hour battery energy storage system will store energy produced during the day when energy is clean and plentiful in California for use in the evening when power is more costly and reliant on natural gas. The addition of the battery at this site will help Clean Power SF and the state further reduce our reliance on natural gas to support electricity use in the evening. The Gonzaga Ridge project is a redevelopment of an existing wind farm at the same site in Pacheco State Park, about 100 miles south of San Francisco. The project is expected to create 200 jobs with prevailing wages during the project's development and construction phases. The project is fully permitted and has approval to interconnect to the transmission system. In addition, all 378 tons of turbine blades from the decommissioned project will avoid landfills and be recycled in a process that will produce about 360,000 pounds of concrete additives. The project is anticipated to come online in June of 2026. Our contracting work, like Gonzaga Ridge and IP Easley, have contributed to the development of Clean Power SF's clean and renewable power portfolio. We recently finalized Clean Power SF's 2023 power content information, and our annual power content labels will be going out to customers in the coming weeks. As you can see in the top right chart on this slide, in calendar year 2023, Clean Power SF's default green product was 100% renewable, with generation coming from solar, geothermal, wind, hydroelectric, and biomass projects. And in the lower right chart, you'll see that Clean Power SF's super green product, also 100% renewable, was supplied by wind and solar energy. This energy was produced by power projects that had been constructed and became operational since Clean Power SF started serving customers in 2016. And our Super Green Saver product, which isn't shown here, provided 100% solar energy at a 20% discount to approximately 1,200 qualifying customers in state-defined disadvantaged communities. Once the Gonzaga Ridge project becomes operational, it will contribute more renewable wind energy to Clean Power SF's overall electricity supply portfolio. So you can expect to see the wind energy portion in these charts increase in future power content labels. So that concludes my presentation. And maybe before I take questions, I did want to acknowledge Commissioners Ronan and Preston. I understand it's your last LAFCO meeting today. So I won't be able to stay till the end of the meeting, but I wanted to thank you on behalf of our Clean Power SF staff for your service and support to our city and also our city's clean energy goals. And I did have something here for you. These are things that we make available to the public in events, and I wanted to encourage the other LAFCO commissioners to come visit us. at an upcoming event, and you can get one of these yourself.
That's so sweet.
Thank you so much, Michael. That was so sweet of you. And, you know, in this short time I've been on LAFCO, but my other longer period on LAFCO, it's just been such an honor to be able to work with you over so many years and your incredible expertise on this issue and dedication to this program has been just a joy to watch. And it's one of those beautiful government programs that works well, creates, good paying jobs, creating clean energy, fueling our city, creating a healthier environment. It's just a win-win-win-win-win-win-win. And so I really want to thank you for all your work and leadership over all these years.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And it is a great story, a great public government story. I'm remembering back to the many presentations that I gave in your first stint on LAFCO as we were trying to grow Clean Power SF from just a little portion of the city to citywide. And, that has all happened in this LAFCO setting. So just thank you for your support and all the input you provided as we've matured this really successful and important program.
Thank you. Commissioner Preston.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo the comments of Chair Roan and thank you and recognize really the incredible program that Clean Power SF is and but also elevate and just thank you for your personal leadership and role and you know, I think as you say there are I feel like the media and the outside world is very good at finding dysfunction in government, and there's plenty of it, and highlighting it in the headlines. And I feel like there are some cases where like things actually work really well and where there's a high level of communication between departments and entities. And I think that your role in really digging, and not just leadership overall in the program, but in digging into the details and communicating and coming at every LAFCO meeting and through all your communication with LAFCO staff and with the public and your transparency and on everything, just not only always having the substantive answers or getting them to provide to the commission and to the public, but your just collaborative spirit and work has really struck me as standing out in my time on this commission. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Any other questions, commissioners? I don't think so. Thank you. We will now open this item up for public comment.
Members of the public who would like to comment on item number 4, please line up to speak now. If you're joining us remotely, please press star 3. Seeing no one here in person, we will go to the public comment line. And Madam Chair, there are no callers.
Public comment is now closed. And since this is not an action item, we'll ask you to read item number 5.
Yes, item number 5 is an authorization to explore a LAFCO study on the feasibility of an oil well plugging workforce development pilot program.
Colleagues, if it's okay with you, Supervisor Connie Chan asked us to schedule this item and then for some reason is not coming today. I didn't really understand why this item would be scheduled anyway, given that there's going to be action at the Government Audit and Oversight Committee shortly that is related to it. So I was thinking of just continuing this item to the call of the chair and until Supervisor Chan is here to explain what she wants to do with this item. Is that okay with you colleagues?
You need to speak on the microphone. Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks. Yeah, just getting my bearings. Are we still
doing... This is item 5.
Oh, okay, sorry, we're in 5. Are we skipping 4B?
I'm so sorry. Yes, we are.
No, it's okay. I was just like...
I meant item 5. So we can still do this out of order. I apologize.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for directing my attention to something I skipped over. So yes, I'm talking about item 5, and then we'll go back to 4B.
Perfect, yeah. Thanks.
Perfect. Okay, so I'm going to make a motion after we hear public comment to continue item 5 to the call of the chair. But we will now open this item up for public comment.
Any members of the public who would like to speak on item number 5, please line up now. If you are joining us remotely, please press star 3. Madam Chair, we do have a remote caller.
Okay.
Jaime, if you could please put the first caller through.
Good morning. My name is Mateo Rebecki, and I represent Jobs for Justice San Francisco, which is a coalition of 30 labor unions, worker centers, and community organizations. And we're here today to urge you to reject the proposed settlement that would transfer the city's Kern County property to Chevron. This settlement contradicts ordinance number 236-16, which prohibits leases for fossil fuel extraction on city land and mandates a just transition plan. This plan needs to explore sustainable future uses for the property and mitigate job impacts from terminating fossil fuel leases. We believe that transferring the land back to Chevron poses risk to community health, air quality, and groundwater. Many idle wells leak methane, contributing to severe health issues and environmental injustice, particularly in low-income communities. Because Chevron is responsible for the most idle uncapped wells in California, making this transfer would be counterproductive to the city's climate goals and ongoing lawsuits against oil companies for their environmental impact. San Francisco has an opportunity to really lead a worker-centered oil well capping project. Jobs with Justice San Francisco has partnered with the United Steelworkers Union for over 4 years on groundbreaking programs to support oil and gas workers amidst industry shifts, including securing a $40 million for a statewide pilot project to provide safety nets for displaced oil and gas workers. With at least 35,000 idle wells across California needing capping, there is a significant opportunity to create good union jobs in the oil well capping for local community members and oil field workers. United Steelworkers represents oil and well drilling and capping workers in Kern County and across California. They are interested in exploring the possibility of running an oil well capping training project on this land in partnership with the city. Funding opportunities for such projects include California.
The speaker's time's expired.
Is there any further public comment?
That concludes the public comment line.
Public comment is now. Oh, sorry, go ahead. Supervisor Avalos.
Thank you. I wasn't sure whether we could speak on the continuance or the actual item, but apparently it's okay to talk on the item. So Jeremy Pollock was a legislative aide in my office, did a lot of work on the legislation of keeping it in the ground ordinance that was passed in December of 2016. I think it was the last legislation I'd passed as a supervisor in San Francisco, and there was a lot of great work that went into it. First, identifying that San Francisco had land in Kern County where we had live oil wells that were owned by Chevron, and how owning that land did not meet our climate action goals and the goals that we had set as a city to reduce our carbon emissions. And it was quite an extreme recognition that we actually had land that was producing oil. And so the notion was to shut it down as quickly as possible. And we can only do that by, you know, saying at the end of this lease that that would be terminated. There was supposed to be all this work that is being now discussed in the item that's here before you today that was not done by the Department of Real Estate. The Department of the Environment was not part of it. It was one of the things that lost, you know, between the transition between supervisors. I did inform Supervisor Asha Safai, and he did express excitement about a just transition for this land, but apparently nothing was done about it. It's not a surprise, actually. I actually think it's actually, if it makes sense to continue this item, let's continue it. I also need more information about whether it's necessary to actually turn this land over or not, because it's a cost to the city that we still have. If Chevron is actually going to be continuing to use this for fossil fuel extraction development, it makes sense that we retain it as a city and do our just transition work. So that will be my recommendation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, and seeing no more public comment, public comment is now closed. Is there a second to my motion to continue this item to the call of the chair?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Sphere. Madam Clerk, can we have a roll call?
Yes, on the motion to continue item number 5 to the call of the chair, Vice Chair Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Preston.
Aye.
Preston, aye. Commissioner Sphere.
Aye.
Sphere, aye. Chair Ronan.
Aye.
Ronan, aye. There are 4 ayes.
That motion passes unanimously. Thank you. And Madam Clerk, can we please go back to item 4B?
Yes, we're going back to item number 4B, which is the LAFCO updates on green financing and the natural gas decommissioning studies.
Wonderful. And I'm sorry, I think I closed the item prematurely. So I thank you, Commissioner Sphere, for calling that out.
This one?
Set up and I had to mess it up.
Hello, commissioners. SFGov, I have a PowerPoint slide. This will be a brief update. So on LAFCO's Green Bank financing study, as part of our MOU with SFPUC, this study will be focused on how the city and county of San Francisco could access funding from various sources, including the Inflation Reduction Act, to start a potential San Francisco Green Bank and have the resulting programs of that Green Bank benefit Clean Power SF ratepayers. The study will build on the Reinvestment Working Group's plans for a municipal financial corporation that will then convert into a public bank. We're splitting this study up into 2 phases. Phase 1, Green Bank Options for San Francisco. This is a policy review, and the purpose of this memo is to provide a summary of LAFCO's work and research on green banks since the conclusion of the Reinvestment Working Group's Municipal Financial Corporation. Our goal is to present this memo to you at the January 2025 meeting. Phase 2 of this memo is financing the San Francisco Green Bank. This study will be conducted by a professional banker with experience working in green banks. The purpose of this study is to outline the finances and how a combination of various federal and local programs could result in benefits to Clean Power SF ratepayers. Other green bank and public banking work, LAFCO will continue to support the Board of Supervisors, the Treasurer, and the City Attorney in their green bank formation resolution and have been doing so. That is it for Green Bank financing.
Wonderful. Commissioners, any questions? Yes, Commissioner Sphere.
Thanks. Thanks so much for the update, Khaled. Something that I've been looking at a little recently that I just wanted to flag, and maybe it's interesting, maybe it's irrelevant, you can decide, is that there's some ongoing work from UC Berkeley's Center on Law, Energy, and the Environment around a public authority to build electricity transmission statewide. And so they also have some really interesting work just surveying what are some of those public financing options. And so just encourage you guys to take a look at that and see some of the discussion that they're leading on this as they anticipate, I would imagine, I don't know for certain, but I imagine that they may introduce something like this in the legislature in the next cycle, in the statewide legislature. So it'd be good to just kind of keep an eye on as we're also thinking about the capitalization of our own green bank for these kinds of purposes.
Absolutely. And we're familiar with CLE. They actually wrote our financing San Francisco Climate Action Plan report. So definitely look into that.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. Can we please open this item up for public comment?
Yes, we are opening item 4B up back up to public comment. If you are joining us remotely, please press star 3. Anyone here in person, please line up to speak. Seeing no individuals here in person, Jaime is checking the call-in line. And Madam Chair, there are no callers.
We are once again closing public comment for item 4. Madam Clerk, can you please call items 6 and 7 together?
Yes, item number 6 is the 2025 Local Agency Formation Commission regular meeting schedule, and item number 7 is the Executive Officer's Report, including an update on the Midtown Parks apartment studies and the LAFCO forward calendar.
Wonderful, and we'll now hear from Executive Officer Pollack.
Great, thank you very much. LAFCO Executive Officer Jeremy Pollack. I have a slide that shows the proposed regular meeting schedule. This is continuing the bi-monthly meeting schedule on the third Friday of the odd-numbered months at 10 a.m. I've highlighted from the forward calendar the anticipated approvals, the two approvals of the LAFCO budget. And that one is fairly straightforward. And then I would invite our policy analysts to present also on the executive officer's report, if you can give a brief update on the Midtown Park apartments.
Hello again, commissioners. This update's on LAFCO's Midtown Park Apartments Municipal Housing Management Study. The LAFCO consultants, Fernando Marti and Steve Suzuki, have been working with the residents of Midtown since January of this year, and they have submitted their draft study that includes a physical needs assessment of the property, as well as recommendations for the future management options of Midtown. The next steps for this draft of the study will be to share it with MOHCD and Calco, MOHCD's property management firm, and request a written response from MOHCD to include as an appendix to the study. Once it has been shared with MOHCD and Calco per our license agreement, then it will become public, and we will post it on our Midtown website. We mainly want three things in the written response from MOHCD. One, how the costs outlined in the physical needs assessment from the consultants would be adjusted when completed by MOHCD in their regular process. What MOHCD budget request would be a bit necessary in next year's city budget to incorporate all Midtown recommendations, and whether MOHCD agrees with the recommendations in the study, specifically for MOHCD's senior staff and Calco staff to attend regular meetings of the Tenant Association of Midtown Park Apartments. Like I said, once the study is complete, including the written response from OHCD, the study will be shared with the Midtown residents for their review and feedback. At this point, it will be also shared publicly. After the residents have had time to review the study and OHCD's response, we will schedule one final meeting with the consultants, Midtown residents, OHCD staff, and as well as LAFCO staff. This final meeting will conclude LAFCO's work on the Municipal Park Apartment Study. Happy to take any questions on that.
Commissioner Preston?
Thank you, Chair Ronan. And I just wanted to, as I have before, just thank you and LAFCO for the work on this. And I think I've remarked on this before, but this is like a little different, right, from a lot of the work LAFCO's traditionally done, but it was also, I think, work that made a lot of sense for LAFCO to support, and it is a great example of, in some ways, the independent nature of LAFCO to be able to support this kind of work that doesn't necessarily work or fit in a lot of other branches of government. And there's history we have talked about, including tremendous distrust of residents of, that the residents of Midtown feel toward some of the city agencies that have historically worked around housing issues at Midtown. And by all reports from Midtown residents who are my constituents, the work done by Fernando Marti and Steve Suzuki, which we talked about at prior meetings, has really been of a very different type and nature than other work that government has done with Midtown residents. So I don't want to repeat comments I've made previously that detail that a little more, but I think it's very significant, and this report, when finalized, is very significant in getting us on a path toward an actual resolution of a really long-standing problem in terms of failed promises and broken promises to the residents of Midtown. So I remain very excited by that this report is nearing completion, but also really don't want to take for granted and want to recognize the role that you and our executive officer have played in supporting that and in providing a way for us as government to support this kind of actual community planning at the grassroots level that I believe would have been very difficult for any other arm of government of the county to actually do. So it may be premature to say congratulations in a sense because we don't have a final report. At the same time, I'm not going to be in this chair to congratulate you when it's finalized. So I will give you the preliminary with lots of asterisks and footnotes. Thanks and congratulations for this work. It's very significant. And I think, look, there are some big decisions that are going to need to be made, not by LAFCO, clearly. I mean, LAFCO had a very specific role in supporting this planning effort. There's some big roles for our next, big questions for our next mayor, for our incoming board members around, potentially at some point for voters, around how we are going to do the significant financial investment that is needed under any of the proposed plans for Midtown, especially the plans that involve potential conversion to an ownership structure, land trust, co-ops, these kind of things. So this, you know, there's work to be done, but I will say, as I did at the outset of this process, in order to make an informed decision about the financial investment, the structure, you have to go through a process that centers residents' voices, and that's really what has happened here. And that alone is noteworthy, worthy of celebration. And so I just want to thank everyone involved in this, including the residents of Midtown, but also flag that like this begins sort of the next chapter. We've stabilized rents through the ordinance that we did earlier in my term, and thank you, co-sponsored, I believe, by Chair Ronan in her supervisor capacity. So we stabilized the rents. We funded this process to actually look at what are the real repairs needed, what are the costs, what's an independent analysis say, and what are the options for ownership and control. So that's where we are. So the road ahead, there's, you know, the big question of how to fund it, how to structure it. There's some big questions the tenants need to answer, but it's good to be in this position where at least the various paths now and what the priorities of the residents are much clearer, and we have a much more collaborative relationship and that we hopefully can continue and improve going forward. And I would say to the mayor's office of housing and the next mayor is to please continue this commitment to and this changed relationship with Midtown, and my reflection on this is in some ways it's being done. I want to, you know, certainly the MoCD staff that has participated in this process I think has done so well and in good faith, but at the same time we still have some structural issues where they're not coming regularly to meet with tenants, and that's one of the issues that you have flagged that they need to respond to. I think there's still a lot of room for improvement for how MoCD deals with Midtown, but it's in a much better place than it has been in our recent history. So thank you for all your work on this.
And thank you, Commissioner, and your office for all your tireless work on this issue.
Wonderful. Commissioner Williams.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Preston, for everything that you've done. Thank you for co-sponsoring, Commissioner Ronan. And thank you, Khalid, for all the work. A couple of questions, I guess. What do you see being the estimated cost? And when it says conducted a survey of residents to inform the final study, how many residents did you survey?
The estimated cost in the report by the consultants for the physical needs assessment of Midtown for all six buildings is approximately $60 to $70 million. And just to contextualize that, this is 60 years of deferred maintenance and repairs. So that has not been done to this complex. In addition to that, there's a need for a reserve that's approximately $40 million over 20 years, the future, next 20 years, after the repairs are completed. And then as far as resident engagement, I believe out of the 120 residences, we averaged approximately 20 per of the attending the six meetings we've had so far. And for the survey, I think it was approximately 21% response rate. Just for a point of comparison, when St. Francis did their survey for ownership options, it was 50%. So it's not the number we aimed for, but it seems to be a standard in housing.
Great. Thank you so much.
We will now open this item up for public comment.
All right, members of the public who would like to speak on item 6 or 7, please line up to speak now. If you're joining us remotely, please press *3. And Madam Chair, we have no speakers or callers.
Public comment is now closed. I would like to make a motion to approve the 2024 regular meeting schedule, if I can get a second.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Williams. Can we have a roll call vote?
Yes, on the motion to approve the 2025 regular meeting schedule, Vice Chair Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Preston. Preston, aye. Commissioner Sevier.
Aye.
Sevier, aye. Chair Ronan.
Aye.
Chair Ronan, aye. There are 4 ayes.
That motion passes unanimously. Madam Clerk, can you please call items 8 and 9 together?
Yes. Item number 8 is a resolution commending Commissioner Hillary Ronan, and item number 9 is a resolution commending Commissioner Dean Preston.
Well, I would like to start off by saying thank you so much for this lovely resolution, and I would like to talk to my colleague Dean Preston for a moment. I have a feeling I will have a longer opportunity at the Board of Supervisors. But Dean, I think the world of you. It has been an absolute pleasure serving on this body with you and serving with you on the Board of Supervisors. You're someone I look up to. You're someone whose opinion I value extremely highly. Your care and love for human beings is beyond measure. Your integrity, your focus on using whatever privilege you have in the world to make life better and easier and more just for those that don't have privilege is inspiring. And being your colleague has been one of the greatest honors of my life. So I just want to thank you so deeply for not only for all of your work and sacrifice, because I think people don't realize what a big sacrifice being an elected official is, but just for the person you are. Thank you for being the epitome of integrity. And whether or not it's acknowledged widely, it is certainly acknowledged by me and so many of your colleagues. Commissioner Williams.
I'm wondering who to start with. I don't know. Let's see. Okay. Commissioner Ronan, your legacy includes so much. Nearly 3,000 affordable housing units in District 9, Mental Health SF, the Student Success Fund, and countless other achievements that have changed lives and strengthened communities. Your leadership really extends far beyond policy. And on a personal note, I will never forget my very first Board of Supervisor meeting on a Tuesday, where I was introduced to you by your righteous and fiery indignation and staunch advocacy, which was, you know, for me, an introduction to being what a leader at City Hall looked like. Thank you for all you've done, and I wish you the very best as you continue to shape this world and San Francisco's future. Mm-hmm. Of course. Sorry, Madam Clerk, can I also speak to, okay, great, thank you. Just gotta get the process right. Okay, I'm gonna not cry as I talk about Commissioner Preston. You're a passionate advocate for equity, sustainability, and really the power of public accountability and your ability to create meaningful change. Your leadership was critical in the fight to hold PG&E accountable. I think that was one of my most favorite LAFCO meetings, was watching you grill and talk to the auditors. You never wavered in your belief that San Francisco could and should have a municipal electric utility that reflects our city's values. You have a gift for bringing the community into the heart of LAFCO and the work that this commission does. You make sure that the voices of everyday San Franciscans are heard and valued and reflected in LAFCO's decisions. Just lastly, I want to thank you, Commissioner Preston, for being a mentor and for helping to radicalize me. I'm not going to cry. We will miss you. Thank you.
Commissioner Sevier?
Thanks. Everyone knows it's my second meeting at LAFCO, and so I really regret that we don't have more time to work together. But I wanted to say that, you know, I'm here because of the influence that you both have had on shaping LAFCO. I think that it is one of the bodies in the city that really is an example of what does modern governance look like? How can we be forward-thinking as we think about how to run a city as wealthy and privileged as San Francisco is? And how can we make sure that those benefits flow out to everyone in San Francisco equally? I think that your mark on what LAFCO has become, I hope will continue in your absence, and that it stands up and helps other young people to think about entering public service, think about serving our community, think about what that looks like with the kind of integrity and care and compassion that the rest of the commissioners have spoken about. So I just want to say thank you for shaping a public body and showing what that can look like and putting all of the emphasis that you have on the critical issues of our time, clean energy, climate change, housing for everybody, thinking about an effective government that actually represents the people and cares about them. I think in the wake of our recent election, we know that these are priorities that everyone wants more than ever, and we have a long way to go to prove that the government can do it, but I think that you all have done a remarkable job of making LAFCO one of those examples of how do we lead by example, let's say. So thank you both so much, and I hope that we get to work together after you exit your supervisor roles.
Commissioner Preston.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Chair Ronan and commissioners, for all the kind words. I really appreciate it. I want to maybe just comment briefly on LAFCO and my time in LAFCO, and also on more specifically about Chair Ronan. I barely knew what LAFCO was. I probably couldn't have even, you know, told you what the acronym. I thought it was kind of a funny name. Like, am I supposed to start laughing, or what? What is this? What is this entity? And so it's been a learning process. In you know, as when we joined the board, and it did some of the less noticed work that we do is on these outside boards and commissions, and we have the opportunity to serve. And then Chair Ronan has served not just here at LAFCO, but on the hugely important on the MTC. On regional transportation policy, and I actually think it's one of the more important things what we choose to do on these various outside boards and commissions. I was, you know, learned a little about LAFCO, joined LAFCO, was a part of the effort to actually have LAFCO be staffed by real positions as opposed to people who are in part-time, undercompensated. The history of LAFCO is carrying all this amazing work, but not even having the very limited budget support from the city that was needed to have folks be able to have more sustainable work here. So we went through the budget process of that process, absolutely thrilled when we lost not thrilled by the loss of our prior executive officer, but thrilled that we had someone with the city hall experience and really brilliance of our executive officer, Jeremy Pollack, coming on board, and then through the public bank work, especially kind of expanding on and having additional support, really supported by the clerk's office and by the LAFCO commission of having the vision of and our executive officer of bringing on the equally brilliant and somehow it seems to have endless encyclopedic knowledge of any issue that he touches with Khaled Samurai. And it's been really great to see the evolution of and this kind of next chapter under your leadership, Executive Officer Pollack, of LAFCO, and continuing to carry a lot of this really incredibly important work that we've talked about with Clean Power SF, but also expanding into some of these areas, as Commissioner Saphir noted, like some of these more cutting edge areas of, things like e-bike delivery, creating a public bank in San Francisco. I will say it's been really like a privilege to be able to work on what I think are some of the most cutting edge issues on housing, on our commitment to combating climate change, and other projects we've taken on here at LAFCO. So I continue to believe, and I've said it every time we approve a budget, I would challenge anyone to find any entity of government that accomplishes even a fraction of what LAFCO accomplishes for the money invested. It just continues to really be amazing to see. I do want to highlight of those efforts the idea, and Commissioner Saphir, you got at this same issue that I was thinking about, which is the idea that I think all our LAFCO commissioners are guided by, that I know Chair Ronan, as supervisors, career has been guided by like this idea that government can actually like intervene and do positive things, right? Something that that is kind of the polar opposite of what's been a right-wing attempt nationally and to some extent locally to vilify the public sector, outsource everything, cut everything indiscriminately, and we're in for a wild ride with Elon Musk and others running the show of what government should look like. But that said, and maybe against that backdrop and just the contrast with the kind of ideas that are being pushed forward here, guided by the idea that government, not only can government solve problems, but that in some situations, and especially when it comes to issues of critical human needs, that a democratic and accountable government is better positioned, right, to address those issues than folks who are driven by profit. And so the work and the expansion into banking and public banking and facilitating the work to lay the groundwork through the Reinvestment Working Group and through the Board of Supervisors for a public bank, right, is at the heart of that. And the idea of also pushing municipal housing, both on the site-specific level of Midtown and more broadly through the studies and work being facilitated here, it's really crucial. And I think that it reflects a view that I think folks who serve on this body and who serve at LAFCO have of what is possible from government entities. And you know, in Chair Ronan, your long-standing advocacy for municipalizing PG&E, right? I mean, cuts to the heart of that, right? Like, are we going to continue to have, you know, a massive multi-billion dollar entity continue to fail not only the environment, but just the needs of people? Or are we going to intervene as government and say, this is an essential service, right? And we're going to figure out how to take it over. So, I mean, you've been for years and years championing that. I want to thank you all for that work and that work that'll be ongoing. And I'm actually really excited that, you know, our former commissioner, Jackie Fielder, will now become supervisor. It's my hope that when she is supervisor, she will find herself back in one of these chairs, not as a member of the public, but as one of the supervisor seats, and to continue a lot of that work. But I did just, you know, I really want to recognize not just our current chair, our past chair with Commissioner and fellow Commissioner Chan, Connie Chan, our current commissioners, Hope Williams and Isaac Sevier, our alternate, Shanti Singh, and then, as I mentioned, Jackie Fielder. Also want to note the key role that the clerk's office plays in supporting all of the work of LAFCO, and so to Angela and to Lisa, thank you for all of that work and for sometimes having to be very creative in figuring out how to dot all the I's, cross all the T's, and make sure that this work that LAFCO does, that the board does, that it's all complementary and done by the book. So thank you for that. I also, you know, I do want to thank the Public Bank Coalition and the external coalitions, the environmental groups who pushed for years for Clean Power SF, other folks, some of whom call into our meetings, others who, you know, weigh in and who drive so much of this work. And then lastly, our council. You know, LAFCO has its own attorney separate from the board, and representing public entities, not always the easiest work, not always, but often some of the most impactful. So Inder, Khalsa, and supporting all that work. So with thanks going around, and I won't reiterate all the projects we've worked together on, I think we've talked about them. I will just briefly, my friend and colleague, Chair Hillary Ronan, and I will have more things to say when we are at the Board of Supervisors about all of our work together. And I think the resolution does a great job, so thank you for crafting that, of really outlining all the many things you've done. Our work together on the board and more limited time here is we have partnered on so many things. It's like really hard to know where to begin. And I think what folks often don't see, they see, you know, you leading on whether it's the school success measure or your mental health SF work or some other big project, and then they see me leading on a big anti-eviction thing. What they don't see is how that work is only possible because you have some key allies on the board. Like, there's from PropEye to the eviction work to like everything I've done on the Board of Supervisors, your strong and unequivocal support has been incredible, and I've tried to provide that in your various pursuits as well, and I think we've often talked about this, how we all have our areas of expertise. You know, you kind of can't do everything on the board, so just knowing that when it comes to like fighting for workers' rights and day laborers, and when it comes to like fighting for immigrants and making sure that we actually have resources for immigrant eviction or deportation defense and legal representation, and that we actually, as a city, figure out how we're going to support our kids, not just by saying, hey, go talk to the school board, but by saying we're going to actually like carve out the funds to supplement a lot of things that aren't provided in the school districts. Just like again and again, if there is anyone who represents the idea of representing people first and foremost and standing up to folks who are trying to deny people their basic needs in order to make to earn profit, that has been your not just career on the board, but your career for so many years, and it's just been an honor to serve with you. And I worry about the Board of Supervisors without you, although I am excited by our next District 9 supervisor and hopefully LAFCO commissioner. So thank you for everything, and not just on policy, but just personally in terms of support. And I will talk more about this at the board, but I will say that there are times when you are in office, especially when you're doing very controversial things, and where you become the target of an entire machine that is out to make sure you don't do advocacy for the people. And in those times, every time, you are always the first to call and to support and to be willing to stand together with me and with community leaders, whoever is fighting a fight that may not be the most popular in the time, but is right. And you're always the first to be there. So that's something I've very much appreciated on the board. So I have so much more to say, but I've taken enough time. But and thank you all for the resolution. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I can tell this is going to be the beginning of lots of emotional moments at the Board of Supervisors. Madam Clerk, can we please open this item up for public comment?
Yes, of course. We don't have anybody here in the chamber, so Jaime will check the remote call-in line to see if we have any callers in the queue, giving them a moment. And no, Madam Clerk, there are no speakers.
Public comment is now closed. And if we can have a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
A motion by Commissioner Williams and second by Commissioner Sphere. Can we take a roll call vote?
Yes, on items 8 and 9, Vice Chair Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Preston.
Aye.
Preston, aye. Commissioner Sevier.
Aye.
Sevier, aye. Chair Ronan.
Aye.
Ronan, aye. There are 4 ayes.
Thank you. Those motions passed unanimously. Thank you so much for those motions, or for those items. Madam Clerk, can you please call item number 10?
Yes, item number 10 is general public comment. Members may address the LAFCO on matters that are within their jurisdiction and not on today's agenda. Seeing no one here in the room, we will check our remote call-in line, and there are no callers.
Public comment is now closed. And Madam Clerk, can you please read item number 11?
Item number 11 is future agenda items.
Colleagues, any future agenda items? Nope, seeing none. Oh, wait, Commissioner Spear.
I wanted to ask about, there's a natural gas decommissioning piece in 4B. Will that be something that we hear in our next meeting?
If we could hear from Executive Officer Pollack.
Yes, absolutely. So the memo includes an update on the natural gas decommissioning study, and happy to follow up with you on that and started fleshing that out with departments, and would love to build more details into that for our January meeting. Well, we'll start planning the work plan for the upcoming fiscal year.
Okay, great, thank you.
Wonderful. Can we please open this item up for public comment?
Yes, no, we don't have anyone here in the room, so Jaime will check the remote line. We don't have any callers.
Public comment is now closed. And Madam Clerk, is there any other business before us today?
That concludes our business for today.
The meeting is adjourned.
SFGov TV, San Francisco Government Television.